Welcome to The Flux Capacitor, a podcast about the future of electricity. I'm Francis Bradley of Electricity Canada. This is number 118, episode 118 of The Flux Capacitor. And this is another stripped-down episode, so no cold open, a short intro and close so we can get it up and online quickly. This will, I hope, prove to be timely because we're talking about Canadian steel, a subject that is inevitably intertwined with the Canada-US trade relationship. On the pod today is the president and CEO of the Canadian Steel Producers Association, Catherine Cobden. Catherine, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, Francis.
Why don't we start off, just for the listener, maybe a little bit of background about steel in Canada and then the Steel Producers Association, and then we can dig in.
That's great. Well, listen, the Canadian Steel Producers Association represents 100% of Canada's steel production. And that production is based from Alberta to Quebec, every province in between, 123,000 direct and indirect employment, as well as a contribution of about $15 billion to Canada's economy. So a very important industry in its own right, but also a strategic industry, an industry that supports key segments of the Canadian economy, but also supports key strategic needs of the country, like infrastructure, like defense systems, et cetera. So you can't really have a developed economy without a steel industry.
Right, right. And the association all represents all of the producers?
We do. So we represent, we have 100% of the steel production within our membership.
Right.
We also have some of the largest customers of domestic steel in Canada in our membership as well. These are customers that have proven to, support the domestic industry, that prioritize the domestic industry, and that really have, frankly, I believe, have helped us to talk to governments and key audiences about the realities of supply chains in steel, because it's not just now the producer, but also the major customers of the steel industry.
Right, right. Okay, so let's kind of jump into the meat of this. And the idea for the podcast and having an opportunity for you and I to chat really stems from the report that we've worked on together called Powering Canadian Steel. So maybe let's start there. Again, for the listener, give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch about the report and what the purpose of it was, and then let's chat about some of the messages that are coming out of this work.
Yeah, so I think first of all, it's a great collaboration, and I want to thank you guys for that opportunity. Honestly, electricity is a very significant input into the production of steel, so that in of itself was a key enabler of the collaboration.
Right.
But obviously our ongoing and future access to reliable, secure, and affordable supply of electricity couldn't be more paramount to our future.
Right.
And particularly as we seek to, look to a future where our CO2 emissions, our carbon emissions are reduced, et cetera. Let me say that Canadian Steel has had a terrific advantage given the greenness, if you will, of the electricity grid in our country and of our, certainly in our province of a key province of production is Ontario, where 75% of our steel is produced. So we have a lot of benefits already, right, but we also have a significant need into the future. So, just a little fact that the report uncovers is through the research to generate this report, we determined that the Canadian steel industry will probably require an additional 430% of electricity demand. Right, by 2050. Yeah. So huge numbers, and obviously intertwines the steel production and electricity sectors of our country. So, hence why I think we had this collaboration.
Yeah, and I want to circle back to that in a little bit because it is quite striking in terms of what the future demand curve is looking like from this sector at the same time where we're seeing demand rising due to a number of other factors as well. But we're at a particular point in time where, I mean, we can't ignore the challenges that we've seen at the border. So maybe we can start there. I'd be interested to kind of get your perspectives. I've seen numbers that there was a 30% drop in steel production in Canada in May of this year. There's a lot of uncertainty because of what's happening on the tariff front. Maybe if you could kind of walk us through what these challenges have meant and will mean for Canadian steel producers that are trying to compete right now.
Yeah. So incidentally, those facts are correct. We've seen a 30% decline in production since May with the enactment of the tariffs. The tariffs started in March at a 25% level, and they weren't increased, Francis, to a 50% level until June. So we did suffer significant production loss at the 25% level. And we've also, of course, seen curtailments in, drops, if you will, in customer base in the United States. We've seen 1,000 layoffs. Like we've seen a significant, and I think we'll see an acceleration of the impact of this tar of these tariffs at 50% moving forward. About half of what we produce heads to the United States, so that's around 6.5 million tons. And at a 25% tariff level, that pulled back significantly, but at a 50% level, it's obviously extremely problematic to serve the US market. So, it's tumultuous and chaotic in the trade world for sure, but it's having a real impact. And every day I'm getting more updates on the impact that the tariffs are having on the Canadian steel industry. Unfortunately, unlike other sectors, we really don't have a lot of options in terms of trade diversification. We either, as I said, we either sold to the United States or the remaining half stayed in Canada. So, and there is a global glut of steel out in the marketplace, something to the tune of 65 times our entire production is out there, so we really can't go elsewhere. So our opportunity in the face of these crushing tariffs is to try to build more domestic market and secure more domestic market for the Canadian steel industry.
And I noted that the government has announced some action. You talked about so much steel out there internationally, and they've attempting to combat dumping and increasing looking for increasing investments in our sector. 50% tariffs on countries that exceed a certain quota of steel, 25% surtax for imports that contain steel from China. Are these actions going to help the Canadian sector, or is it, I'm just wondering, is it kind of too little, too late, or is
Yeah,
this?
so listen, there are ongoing active discussions with the federal government on the trade tools. I want to say, though, that I think they were an important first step, but they can only be a first step because essentially the track we're on is we're trying to rebuild an industry that has just lost essentially 6.5 million tons of market. The domestic market in Canada is about 13 million tons. And right now, the Canadian as part of that is only about a third of that. So we have room to grow in the domestic market. The challenge is that these trade measures that you've just stepped through, that the tariff rate quota system, the country of melt tariffication on products from China and Russia, those tariffs only kind of free up about 1 million tons of potential market. So we still have a 5 million ton gap that we need to go after to offset the impacts of the United States. And I want to also point out that We're not looking at this as an offset only of the United States. For far too long, Canada has welcomed unfair traded steel in our market. You know,
Right.
there's a huge amount of dumping. We've taken case after case. We have 27 countries, 27 countries that have practiced unfair trade in Canada. And we have those findings going on at the Canadian Border Service Agency. Is Canada Border Service Agency is responsible for those findings, but we have taken the trade cases to put those findings in place at, you know, $1 million a trade case, et cetera. It is a real problem that has persisted for years. So our hope is that this crisis that we've been unwittingly, you know, entered into by the President of the United States, that this will actually help us get our house in order in Canada finally on the unfair trade practices going on.
'Cause that, I mean, to the layperson that's not familiar with the dynamics of the sector, I would imagine that it sounds counterintuitive that on the one hand, we're concerned that we're losing market share in the United States, but on the other hand, we've got product that's coming into Canada as well. Is and it's not the same product, really, is it? I mean,
It is. About 81% of what we import, we can produce in Canada. So there's a very, you know, 20% that we don't, and fair enough, and that should come in, you know, untariffed and everything else. But for what we do produce, you know, we need to take very targeted action. By the way, we're not suggesting the same approach as the United States. We're suggesting targeted action on unfair traders. We know who they are. There's, as I mentioned, well-adjudicated processes that have identified this through many decades from the Canadian International Trade Tribunal. So we know where the problems are. So we need to put in place trade measures at the border that basically stop unfair trade practices. Right now, you know, two-thirds of our market is up for the opportunity for the Canadian steel industry if we put those measures in place. And, you know, it'll be less than two-thirds at the end of the day because we don't produce everything. But we want to go after as much of our market as possible, and we can't compete with unfair traders. It's an unlevel playing field.
Gotcha. And we're also heading into a future where the product, while the end product may be the same, the environmental impact is different. So, I mean, that is, and you mentioned earlier about the potential clean advantage that we've got. How do we make sure that clean advantage is somehow kind of, I don't know, recognized in the marketplace or is valued somehow?
Yeah, so we've been struggling with this for some time because, and I alluded to it, certainly for the 75% production of steel in Ontario, you know, the clean grids and the production in Quebec. I mean, those clean grids are super important to us and have given us this. When you and for other reasons as well, we are by third party benchmarking, not our own, in the global leadership position on CO2 emissions. We're number two and number three in the world by production type. So, we have already achieved a leadership position on environmental performance as it pertains to climate emissions. And so, but translating that hasn't been a translation of that in our market. You know, we still are subjected to the same dumping. And, you know, I am certain that some of the countries that are dumping in Canada do not meet the test of the environmental standards that we have in our country, or labor practices that we have in our country. So when they're considered dumping, it's not just for price advantages that they've been able to because they have deep pockets and they're state-owned enterprises or what have you. It's also that they're not operating on the equal footing of the domestic industry around regulatory requirements, labor practices, environmental performance, that sort of thing.
So, one of the questions I would have, I often talk about, the impact that electricity has on the economy, how it's, critical and foundational. I always, talk about we're 30 odd billion of GDP, but we're the first 30 billion of GDP because, it's foundational and it's the infrastructure that everybody else relies upon. But like the steel sector plays a pretty foundational role in the economy as well, doesn't it?
That's the way we view ourselves as well. And we totally understand why you view yourself that way, but we're right there with you in the sense that it's not just the, what we contribute to the economy in terms of jobs and economic performance, but more importantly, it's the support we provide and the opportunities we provide to, many other manufacturing, all really all manufacturing industries in Canada, the energy sector, the electricity sector. You're not going to build out your distribution, your transmission, your generation without steel. Hopefully, you'll choose clean Canadian steel. But anyway, all of that to say that we are having a domestic industry is quite foundational to a country's economy because of the wide, places that we end up. I mean, and I've given some high sectoral examples, but if you also think about a farmer's field with a tractor, right? That tractor's steel. I mean, there's a lot of ways that, or when you think of the wind towers, that's steel. It goes on and on. It truly is all around. So yeah, it's really again why we do see ourselves in that same mode of the foundational, economic force, if you will, for Canada.
And then as we look to the future, and you mentioned it earlier when we're looking at a potential increase, significant increase. I think it's at 430%
Yeah.
increase out to 2050 in terms of the demand for electricity in the sector. At the same time, when we're seeing the rise of AI and data centers and EV and everybody else wanting more power, what is it that is driving that increased demand for electricity from the steel sector? Is it fuel switching primarily, or is it more than just that?
No, a lot of it will be technological advancement. So, for example, I should mention in the middle of a trade war, very tur you know tumultuous times, we did see Algoma Steel start up its new electric arc furnace, which is a moment to be celebrated right across our country. That's a 3 million ton reduction of CO2 through that technological switch. It's huge, and it's really something we should all take note of that Algoma has managed to accomplish. But let's consider as well, they're in the middle of a trade war with the rest of the steel industry, and all of our futures are uncertain. So here we are producing some of the greenest steel in the world, as determined by others, not us, and also making investments and have made investments for further transformation. And yet our future really isn't certain by any stretch of the imagination. These tariffs are crushing. I talked already about a 30% production loss and thousands of jobs lost, but it's going to get much worse as time goes on here, unfortunately.
All right. Well, as we look to a future kind of
Yep.
beyond what hopefully is a short to medium term bump in the road, one of the concerns that we've had is building infrastructure is difficult. I mean, it is a challenge. Our permitting regime taken, as a whole, just makes it very difficult to get things done. I often quote a World Bank ranking, ranks Canada 38th out of 39 OECD countries for the time it takes to get like construction permits. Is this something that you see in your sector as well?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, again, a crisis can facilitate change. Just like I've mentioned, this crisis providing opportunity to finally address unfair trade. I'm hopeful that for our country, this crisis will also help us address, our permitting process, our speed to execution, our ability to get things done in our country. And, it's not. Obviously, the steel sector is not in the same, it's not to the same degree as, the energy sector, perhaps, but all obviously we build things in the steel industry and we need our customers to build things that use steel. So we 100% agree that we need to do things more efficiently. Not to water down the outcomes and making sure that the protections are in place, but really to ensure that we can get through these projects and get these big things done as a country. And I feel, I'm hearing a lot about this in the political domain, and I'm really pleased by that. But we really do need, as your data point suggests, we do need a fundamental transformation of how we go about permitting in our country.
Yeah. A little bit of a detour, and this is something that I always ask folks that come on the podcast. I'd be interested in what your journey has been. But make the joke every time on the podcast. When you were a little kid, Catherine, on the playground, is this what you always dreamed of doing? What was your journey to your role today?
Well, I grew up in a pulp mill town,
Oh,
a
okay.
single industry pulp mill town in Espanola, Ontario, which relied entirely on that pulp mill for its economic, and all the offshoot industries. So, to say that I'm deeply familiar with the impacts of manufacturing loss on communities would be an understatement. I spent many years in the forest industry. As you know, the forest industry has many trade challenges as well, and have been in Ottawa in some form of representation work and advocacy work for about 30 years. I joined the steel sector 6.5 years ago, and so it's my new sector. But up until then, I'd pretty much worked in the forest industry with a few little detours here and there. But and both of these industries, they contribute in different ways to the country and are really foundational. So it's quite interesting for me to sort of think about both of my industries, if you will.
Cool. All right. Well, listen, coming back to that, the report. The report supports Buy Canadian policies, particularly when talking about, federal procurement. Maybe if you could walk us through why this makes sense beyond just, helping Canadian companies through a rough patch. Why should we be promoting Buy Canadian?
Well, for sure, in the context of Canadian steel, when you buy Canadian steel, you're not just helping the economy, you're also helping the planet because of our green credentials. So that part, and we're in a trade war now, so things have slowed down significantly, but that won't last forever, and we'll continue on our journey of decarbonization, right? So I think there's many benefits to buy Canadian, social benefits, community benefits, as I've mentioned, environmental benefits, and certainly those economic benefits that we know
Yeah, there's like an economic multiplier effect, no
I
doubt.
think so. Yeah, well, I do. Absolutely. There certainly is when you support an industry like ours. We have an unusual, one of the reasons why governments around the world fight for their steel sector, and this is something we see, is because it has a higher job multiplier than most other sectors. So World Steel, which is our large association globally, estimates, has done a lot of work with big accountant firms. I can't remember who they were, but anyway, basically that concluded that the steel industry drives about a job ratio of about 7 to 1. So it's a significant driver of employment and of prosperity in communities that. And so countries all around the world look to support their steel industry, but some of them go too far, and then their steel industry is practicing unfair trade. That's one of the key reasons why unfair trade is so prevalent in the global economy, is because governments get really deep in there in different ways.
Well, speaking of government getting into things, and I'm not suggesting this is in any way an unfair trade practice, on the contrary, but our government does play a role in terms of funding innovation. I think, for example, the SIF, the Strategic Innovation Fund, that is providing support for new lines of businesses and seeking to strengthen supply chains. Do you see your sector making use of these kinds of programs?
So first, let me address the fact that something like SIF, programmatic support for sectors, is not a non-market economy unfair trade practice. That's clear, right? Global economies all over the world, all of our allies do this. This is not an unusual. So let me just be clear. When I'm talking about unfair trade and government support, it's non-market economy. It's much, much deeper, everything from banking, corporate state ownership, et cetera. There's a whole slew, an array of research, by the way, and information out there on this topic.
Yeah.
As far as the CIF goes, I mean, I think what's really interesting is the vision that we've been talking to the government about and that we see in their July 16th package, which is, as I said, a very important first step on the trade measures. But it's also a step, a significant step on the making, helping C Canada rely, reduce its reliance, frankly, on others. So it's that fund exists for the steel sector to produce the things that we don't produce. So I talked about 20% we don't make. There's a possibility now through this fund that we could start becoming less reliant on the US for products that we've become completely reliant on them on. And a perfect example is rail lines,
Oh,
the
yeah,
steel
okay,
and rail.
yeah.
And the steel and rail is no longer produced in Canada. It used to be produced in Canada 20, 30 years ago. I'm not exactly sure the exact time frame. But honestly, with the integration of our economies, et cetera, industries back out of certain spaces because other industry, the US industry was had it covered, and the US and the Canadian industry concentrated in other places.
In
So,
a world of NAFTA, yeah.
correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And a world of NAFTA over 30 years too, right? So
Yeah.
it's not, so this integration has really happened. And so what this announced program, when it talks about, you read the wording there, I don't have it in front of me, but when it talks about shifting, it really is about making the products that we need as a country
Yeah.
that we become solely reliant on the United States for. I believe that's my read of that particular program. And I think that's a laudable goal, especially given the uncertainty and, the challenges we're facing in the United States. And the protectionist movement in the United States didn't just start with Trump, right? Trump 2.0. It's been in place for quite a long time now. And so again, trying to make, silver linings of this crisis, an opportunity to, become more self-reliant.
Yeah.
This is what I see that particular program going to be able to help us do.
Yeah, great. Okay. One of the concepts in the report that I did want to drill down on a little bit is this the carbon, I'm doing for the listener, I'm doing air quotes here. The carbon leakage paradox, right? So that that's interesting tension in the report that talks about that aggressive environmental regulations might actually increase global emissions if they drive Canadian production offshore to dirtier jurisdictions. I think a really interesting concept, and we kind of touched on this to a certain extent, but I mean it is that difference in terms of how potentially clean our sector is compared to others. So maybe again for the listener, if you could unpack this carbon leakage paradox, which I think is a really, really important idea to get people to wrap their heads around.
Here's a now putting it in more tariff terms or tax terms, if you will. So if we have $170 price per ton on carbon, and we have $1,000 is our price for hot rolled coil or whatever, you got a 17% tax you're dealing with, right? Or a 17% tariff. Other countries coming into the country do not face that same tax, tariff, whatever we're going to call it,
Right.
rate. So that's the leakage potential,
Yeah.
because if you're competing in a world that maintains, so it's, I talk a lot about level playing field on trade policy, but this is the same thing wrapped up in carbon policy. It's also an unlevel playing field if your major economies that are importing into Canada do not have a carbon price, and we do, and it's at that high a percentage. You can see how that would erode our capacity to compete, and you'd see more and more contracts going to others, offshores or folks that do not have that carbon price. So that's the carbon leakage paradigm that we're in. And we think, we're not, we have asked the federal government to consider how hard and fast they adjust the carbon price and the stringency on a sector as trade exposed as ours because of all this global over phenomena or global overcapacity, all of these unlevel playing field practices we have in our own market. But that's why, because there is a huge amount of steel coming in that we're not producing, and about two-thirds of our entire market is served by this, and most of it isn't covered by a carbon price.
Yeah. Should we be looking at a, I believe the term is carbon border adjustments?
Yeah, so carbon tariffs, which is a carbon border adjustment mechanism, is specific to the EU, but carbon tariffs, which could be designed like a CBAM or in other ways, is
Okay.
definitely a way around this to mitigate this problem.
Yeah.
I do note that that has been an area of discussion for quite some time, especially given, that one of our largest trading partners in steel, the United States, doesn't have a carbon price. So there's a lot of US steel coming up. I mean, the current tariff war and the trade dynamics is really, 50% versus 17%. Obviously, the priority right now has been on dealing with the current tariff situation with the United States, but
Right.
there's no doubt that this carbon leakage problem exists in the steel industry in Canada, and we're going to have to address it.
Yeah.
Way could be carbon tariffs, could be being really careful about the carbon price on trade exposed. There already is a mechanism, you may be familiar with this, in the output based pricing system, which is the federal carbon price regime. There is a way to manage trade exposure,
Right.
but it doesn't go far enough yet.
The OBPS, yeah.
OBPS, yeah.
Yeah,
That's a mouthful. Output based pricing system.
we love our acronyms in Ottawa policy circles. Sure
We
do.
really do.
Catherine, I'm going to ask you for, as I do with everybody who comes on the podcast, the last question, and that's for a book recommendation. And we've assembled all of our book recommendations into what has now become a really, really good reading list on our Flux Capacitor Book Club.
Does it
So
have to be fiction or nonfiction
it
work?
can be whatever you would suggest. If we were not actually doing a podcast, but in fact, sitting and having a coffee, and I said to you, what should I be reading next weekend? What book would you recommend to me?
Well, this book is the one that's on my mind. Well, here, let me backtrack. Leadership and leading with positivity has been on my mind a lot right now, given all the negative situation facing in the industry. Now, that brought me back to a book I read quite some time ago, actually. So it's more of a professional book recommendation than let's go and have a nice, Sunday afternoon read. But I've been thinking a lot about leading in a time of crisis with grace and dignity and positivity and et cetera. So the book I opened up again is called, I'm not ready for this, so I don't have the author with me, but it's called Resonant Leadership.
Resonant leadership.
Yeah. And it just talks about leading with resonance. It of course discusses the full toolkit that a leader has to choose from. But the idea that you can be a very strong leader and effective leader from a place of resonance as opposed to negativity and consequences and what have you.
Wow. Okay. So that book is Resonant Leadership,
I
Renewing
think.
Yourself and Connecting with Others Through Mindfulness, Hope and Compassion
Oh, did you
by,
just find it?
I did
Okay.
just find it,
Okay.
and it's by Richard E. Boyatzis and Annie McKee. Wow. What a great addition. And talk about timely right at this moment.
It's just been on my mind a lot. Like it is, we are in a very negative world in the steel world right now. And I would have even say, politically, there can be a lot of negativity around us. And as a leader at this time, I just want to remind myself that that there are other ways to conduct business. It doesn't have to be done in a sort of negative, hammering kind of way.
Terrific. That's a great great addition. I will
Okay, great.
track this one down, absolutely.
Okay.
And Catherine, I want to thank you for taking the time to join the podcast.
That's great, Francis. I want to thank you, and I also want to thank your organization for doing the collaboration with us on the research work that this podcast is, or our discussion started off with, and in terms of our mutual opportunity to strengthen both the electricity sector and Canada's steel sector. I really appreciate you guys having kind of the vision and foresight to work with us on this.
Fantastic, and right back at you.
Okay, great.
No, it was a terrific collaboration and a great report. And so with that, I'll thank you for joining the pod.
Awesome.
And then for the listener, for those that have been with the podcast since the beginning, and those that have joined along the way, thanks for listening. Please take the time to rate the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen, and let me know what you think of the Fluxicapacitor. You can find me on Instagram as the Brad Bradley. I'm on Blue Sky now as at Francis Bradley, on LinkedIn or through our website at electricity.ca. The website for this pod is thefluxcapacitor.ca, and it includes links for this episode on the show page, this being episode 118. And while you're there, check out the book club page, which provides info on and links to the books which have been recommended by guests of the Flux Capacitor, including Catherine's recommendation, Resonant Leadership, Renewing Yourself and Connecting with Others Through Mindfulness, Hope, and Compassion by Richard E. Boyatzis and Annie McKee. And let's continue the electricity conversation on our Facebook page, on Instagram, and at electricity.ca.